I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Today I'm speaking with James McCoy, VP of Academic Affairs for the College of Southern Nevada, or CSN. CSN empowers students and communities to achieve, succeed, and prosper. The new school year is starting on Monday, August 29th, with some brand new programs beginning as well. James, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thanks, Heather, for having me.
So can you give us a little bit of a background on the college? When exactly was the College of Southern Nevada founded?
You bet. Can you believe, Heather, we are celebrating our 50th year in this Las Vegas, Southern Nevada Valley.
Wow.
Founded in 1971. We're throwing a big sort of celebration bash this September to really thank our community for all these years of support. I think about, 50 years ago, I certainly wasn't at this institution. There were five faculty members way back then who kind of put their heads together and created this place. And now fast forward 50 years, we're serving the Nevada population, anywhere from 25 to 35,000 students, depending on the year. One of the most diverse colleges in the country, certainly the most diverse in the state of Nevada. We really celebrate the longevity that we have had in this community.
Yeah, that's great. So when those five people got together and decided to create the college, what was their goal? What were they offering to the Valley that we didn't have here?
You bet. So you think about the mission of a community college. It's the community's college. And that was absent back 50 years ago with a mission toward access. So the premise was we wanted to follow and have a community college mission in Southern Nevada that would allow for an open door education platform. Didn't matter what zip code you came from or what your grades might have been in high school or how long it's been since you've been out of school. Really, just if you've got a high school diploma or a GED and you've got a beating heart and a desire to learn and progress in your education, CSN in those days was the place to do it. And as the college has evolved and grown considerably since those five faculty members sort of founded this institution, the mission has never ceased. The mission of open access, full-on engagement to ensure our students who are walking in the door on day one or walking out successfully on graduation day. That mission has been sort of our heartbeat for these last 50 years and will continue in perpetuity.
That's awesome. So what new programs are being launched this year?
We're so excited. You know, anytime we want to have a new program or a new degree or certificate, there's a lot that goes into that thinking process. We engage with our local employers. We engage with the local and state sort of economic and workforce development agencies and really figure out where are the employees needed in our economic base, in our valley, in our state. And it's from those premises that we develop new curriculum, cutting edge curriculum to meet the workforce needs of this century, right? Of this decade. And mm-hmm. In those areas, we're excited. We went through an internal process and then a very public state process to get these six new programs on the books. Two of them are certificate of achievement programs. These are short-term accelerated employee workload-based programs. One's in advanced manufacturing, and the other is in computer science, our first stackable credential, as we call it, in that space. And then we've got two brand new two-year degrees, one in computer science and the other in cloud systems administration. And then really excited about our two new four-year degrees that we're offering for the first time, one in environmental conservation and the other in environmental lab sciences. And each of those two degrees are designed to give students enough work-ready skills along with the education they need to be successful so they can go out there in this community and work in the environmental science space. So each of these areas, we're just super excited to grow. No doubt we have over 200 programs at CSN, these being the most recent six new ones. And so, we'll see how the students respond and more importantly, see how it's working out for them upon employment afterwards.
Yeah, sounds great. So with those 200 other programs, are there no other four-year bachelor programs?
We've got a lot, in fact. We're approaching about 15 now. Everything from bachelor's in nursing to a mm-hmm. bachelor's in fire science. We've got cardiorespiratory sciences, a bachelor's in dental hygiene. One of our most popular bachelor's programs is in our business department. It focuses in on project management. We've got a bachelor's in American Sign Language, a variety. And we've created these bachelor programs to fulfill sort of niche areas for students to explore, and then ultimately that lead directly to the workforce. Our other programs in the Associate of Arts, Associate of Science, Associate of Business Space, that two-year degree kind of program, are mostly transferable. So it's kind of a bifurcated mission at CSN. One is in the space where we're creating a workforce, right? And so they come to CSN, they get the education that they need done, you know, in a variety of fields, from anthropology to welding and everything in between. And so they get their two-year degree and they're off to the races for employment. And then the other half of that bifurcated mission is to support the transfer agenda, where students can come in, earn sort of that liberal arts or that STEM-based two-year degree, and then transfer that in whole to one of our four-year institutions in Nevada or elsewhere across the country. So we're sister institutions with UNLV here in town and Nevada State College here in town. Perhaps they want to go up to Reno and attend UNR upon transfer from CSN. We have these 2+2 arrangements, Heather. So when a student completes their two-year degree, it transfers seamlessly to that four-year degree if that four-year degree is not offered at CSN.
Wow, that's great. So as you mentioned, people can take classes at any age, but you know, sometimes when they've been out of school for some time, they might be working, whether full-time or part-time. So what kind of schedule ability do students need, whether they're pursuing a certificate program, associate's degree, or a bachelor's?
You bet. You know, we live in a 24/7 town, right? And that's one of the things that I know we all enjoy. And so the academic piece and the career exploration piece, the new training piece as it relates to a class schedule at CSN is no different. It's really a 24/7 kind of experience with options. And so I think about the traditional student who might be coming onto campus sometime between 8 and 5. Do we have classes during that time? Absolutely. All day long, every morning, every afternoon, every evening. But we offer classes late at night too. So when that shift worker is getting done at say 10 o'clock at night, and now they're all amped up and ready to go to school, right? Their day is done in the workplace, but they're ready to continue their education. They're going to come on over to CSN and we're going to offer classes all the way till midnight. And if that's not their jam, maybe they want to take some courses online. We've got one of the largest online colleges in Nevada. About 15,000 students are engaged in our virtual college. And about 26 complete degrees can be taken from A to Z all the way through in that online environment. So that becomes really that 24/7 engine, right? Students can participate in their classes at a time that's convenient for them each week. As long as they're staying on target with the calendaring of activities, they can literally do this at 2 a.m. if they wish, or 2 p.m. if they wish in that online space.
That's great. I had no ideas. That's really awesome. Oh. And what types of internship opportunities are available for students?
You know, it's that hands-on learning, Heather, that I valued when I was going to college, I'm sure as you did, right? Thinking about, you know, what we learn in the classroom is absolutely applicable to the day-to-day lives in this career. But something magical happens when they can take their skill sets that they've learned and read about in the classroom and actually apply it in real form by serving in an internship within their career path. When I was in college, Heather, I was in radio broadcasting back then. Yeah, that was my undergraduate degree. And I valued that internship at that radio station. Yes, it was the overnight shift. And back then it was reel-to-reel machines and there was no computer technology, all that stuff. But I learned how to cut tape, right, in that internship that I could not even read about, right? Reading wouldn't do it justice. It was that internship experience that brought that to life. And so we've kind of manifested that same hands-on learning approach in many of our programs. It's hard to train a nurse until they get out there on the clinical floor and experience and observe and watch, right, what's happening in that hospital. That's the kind of simulation and internship and clinical experiences that we offer to our students in a variety of our programs.
Awesome. Okay, so where can people find out more information about the College of Southern Nevada and your new programs, as well as the 200 existing programs, or even apply to attend as students?
You bet. Thanks for that. It's so simple. On our website is the best place to go. We walk new students through that process of admissions and enrollment. And that website is www.csn.edu. click on apply now, and the rest will, the steps are very, very clear. They can explore the different pathways, the career paths, the degrees and certificates that are out there. They can learn about the financial aid opportunities and the scholarships that are available to students. Really, as the most affordable college in this state, which we really value from our Access mission, we would never want to see students not go to college because they thought finances were going to get in the way. At CSN, we make it very easy for students to find the right financial resources to support their education.
Awesome. And the in-school learning is starting on Monday. Is it the same for the online programs as well?
You bet. All of our fall semester, as we say, begin on Monday, August 29th. So this is the week to do it, right? We've got a late registration week that ends on September 6th. For the regular 16-week semester. But if a student is kind of contemplating, they can't really commit necessarily to starting classes here on the 29th, but they know they want to get started this fall, we have a variety of short-term and late-starting classes. And so if they can't get on the wagon this August, they can certainly maybe look at an October start date where we're running sort of 8-week sessions starting in October that'll run through December. So about every 8 weeks, students should have the opportunity to onboard at CSN, go through the admissions process, get the advising and the career counseling if they'd like it, and then get into that classroom so they can finally get that degree they've always dreamed of.
Nice. Okay. So once again, csn.edu. CSN.edu is the website to go to. You can find out all about the 200 programs that they have, the certificate programs, the associate's degrees, which are 2 years, the bachelor's degrees, which are 4 years, the online programming. Classes do start on Monday, but you know, you can start a little late if you want to, or you can find out what there is available and maybe start on the next go around, which is coming in October. So again, csn.edu is the place to go, csn.edu. And James, I want to thank you so much for being here and letting us know about the new programs, letting us know all the amazing things that are happening at the College of Southern Nevada. And I appreciate your time.
Sure thing. Thank you, Heather. Have a good one.
You too.
Finish your high school diploma for you and your family. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
I'm Heather Vail, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me today is John Block, Executive Vice President of the Park West Gallery. The gallery just revealed the top 10 finalists for their second annual Made in Vegas art competition, and public voting will now select the final three. John has nearly 20 years of industry experience, having worked in fine art printing, framing, and the cruise industry. As EVP, he plays a leading role in Park West Gallery's sales and operations management, strategic planning, training, and development. John, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Heather.
So, when exactly was the Park West Gallery founded?
So we were founded in 1969, and we are now, our world headquarters is in Southfield, Michigan, which is just outside Detroit. But we actually got our start in Central Park West in New York City. So that's where Park West comes from. And then for a variety of reasons, including the cost of doing business, we relocated to the Midwest, Michigan, and we've had a wonderful experience there. In fact, we're now going back to New York, and in December, we're opening a gallery in Soho in the famous art district in New York City. But we have galleries now that exist in Detroit, Michigan, Honolulu, Hawaii. And of course, our flagship is in Las Vegas in the Forum Shops at Caesars Palace.
Nice. Okay. So, you know, when you're talking about art galleries in New York, obviously that's a world-class city for art galleries. What exactly set Park West Gallery apart when it was first started and even today?
Well, you know, Park West has always had a mission to deliver art to everyone, meaning that people from all different walks of life, all different socioeconomic backgrounds. That's a big part of why our business strategy was to operate in hotels, doing the beginning of pop-up kind of auctions in hotels long before that was a thing. And then also operating on the cruise ships, because you get this huge cross-section of people that are, well, not necessarily the folks that would happen into a gallery in Soho in New York City, So all kinds of different people with all different backgrounds checking out art. And I think what really sets us apart is that we have art for that collector who wants to acquire something to hang on their wall, you know, framed, matted, and chipped at like $100. And then we have art for the collector that wants to buy a Rembrandt or a Picasso or Dali and pretty much everything in between. I think that's why Park West has been the incredible success that it's been. You know, we have something like 3 million active customers, which I don't think there's a gallery in the history of the world that has had that size of crowd collecting from it.
Yeah, that's incredible. So people, when they're on cruise ships, on a cruise, actually buy art to take home with them?
Believe it or not, more art is purchased that way than any other way that exists out there today. And so, of course, we have a bit of a captive audience when people are at sea, but it ends up being part of the entertainment experience. All of the people we have working for us at sea, not only are they super knowledgeable about art, but they're great art historians. And so it usually starts out with someone going to one of the free seminars where we're just talking about art. Nothing's for sale at the seminar. And then maybe they'll stop by our gallery. We have gallery installations on every ship. And some of the collections are worth, you know, tens of millions of dollars. So they'll come in and take a look. And then generally one of our people will give them some great incentive to check out an art auction. And very often people start out by, like I said, getting something for $100 or $200. And then they come back for their next cruise and collect something a little bit more significant. And it just continues to grow. We have collectors who have been with us now for, you know, 30, 40 years, collecting several pieces every time they cruise. One question we always have is, I don't know where they hang it all.
So what exactly is the Made in Vegas art competition?
So when we came to Las Vegas, one of the things we wanted to do was plant our flag and say, you know, we're not just here to appeal only to the tourists. We want to be part of the community and we want to be part of the Vegas art community. And of course, it's been a bit of a tough nut to crack for us. And that's because we opened up in December of 2020. So all of the cool things that happen normally for the city for art were put on hold for all of this time. And so we decided we had to take matters into our own hands. And we knew there was incredible talent in Vegas. Obviously, in a community where you have so much in the way of performing arts, and of course, there's going to be visual arts, right? So we knew there were visual artists. We, you know, I've been into some of the galleries there and just thought these are very cool. Now, obviously, some of it is really geared towards the tourism, the tourist people who come to visit the city. But we wanted to do kind of a gallery that was for, you know, keeping with our theme, for everybody, for folks from Las Vegas as well. So Made in Vegas is all about sourcing local talent to join our company. Now, some people might choose they only want to be represented in the forum shops at Caesars with us, and that's fine. We're hoping, though, that what happened last year will happen again. And last year, I think we had 600 people who submitted their artwork. We ended up offering contracts to, I think, about half of the top 10. Obviously, there's only one winner, so I don't want to mess up the contest rules because obviously there's a bunch of legal stuff that goes with that. But after the contest is over and a winner is selected by our panel of judges, we're free to offer contracts to anybody we want. And we ended up last year, I think 4 or 5 artists from Las Vegas ended up being selected. And we're very excited about that. They've been wildly successful. Kat Tatz is one of those artists. And that is just, she's incredible. You can go to our website, parkwestgallery.com, and check out Kat. And then Melanie Stemmel is another one of those artists. And I was kind of fired up too, because we wanted to find, you know, people from all different backgrounds. That happens to be 2 female artists. But we had, this year in particular, we had a number of really incredible artists with, you know, varied ethnic backgrounds as well that submitted their work. And we're very excited about that and adding some folks to Park West, putting some beautiful colors, not just on the walls, but having some wonderful people of color joining our ranks as well. So it's just been a dream, you know, to have 600 applicants, to get to see 600 artists, their visions of the world. I mean, that's what they're showing you, right? In their art.
Yeah.
You get to look at all of that and get to see all those perspectives. The hardest part about this whole thing, let me tell you, Heather, trying to choose a top 10, trying to pick the winner, it's really tough. And that's why we're relying on a panel of judges, because I could never do it on my own.
Yeah, for sure. So 600 submissions last year. How many were received this year?
I think we were at, I think it was 300 or 400 this year. And, you know, it's always a little bit tough to tell because some people submit, like if they, let's say they do sculpture and they do paintings and they do drawings, sometimes they'll submit three different, you know, submissions. And also it's tough because sometimes they have different artist names that they use for different types of art. So for instance, there was one person who submitted this year who the abstract art by this artist was under one name and their more traditional art, like portraits and that kind of thing, was under another name. So anyway, somewhere in the 300 or 400 category. And, you know, we were really pleased with that. And we're going to do this as often as it's effective, meaning if people, if the community will engage in it and community wants to do it, we've been doing it once a year. I may even go to twice a year, because if we keep picking up great Las Vegas artists, like what we found last year and this year, I'll keep doing it as often as we can possibly do it. It's been just such a wonderful thing for our company.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned it was tough, but what exactly are the criteria for choosing the finalists?
It's really simple. It's all about quality. We are just looking for people who have, obviously you have to have, at least in my opinion, it takes a gift to be able to create. But we're not looking for a particular type of art or style of art. We would never want to limit ourselves or limit the artists in that way. We're looking for someone who has that wow factor, who has obviously incredible talent, high quality attention to every detail of their work. You know, we don't interview the artists, so I don't get to find out about work ethic or any of those sorts of things in advance. We have to do it just solely based on their submissions. And that's also difficult, because I find myself wanting to go over and tour the studio, because you get to learn so much more about an artist when you do that. But anyway, there'll be time for that. But yeah, the hard part is figuring out how to narrow it down. There were so many quality folks, and we managed to get it down to 10. And now we'll see what the public says, along with our panel of judges.
So Park West Gallery showcases all types of art, from abstract to photorealism and everything in between?
We do, absolutely everything in between. So, you know, figurative works and pop art and, you know, abstract art. It's such an interesting thing, because 20 years ago when I entered the art space, it was really difficult to get mainstream collectors to consider abstract art. And now we have people clawing for it. We can't get enough of abstract art, which is really something, how the ebbs and flows of the art world. Because at that time, for instance, 20 years ago, everybody wanted photorealism. And now it seems people want color, and they want something that really challenges them. And, you know, that's who knows how long that'll be on trend, but it's certainly on trend right now. But we're not excluding anyone, because you can imagine on every cruise ship, at every one of our private VIP events that we do all around the world, we do about 90 private events a year for our collectors. There's someone who wants photorealism. There's someone who wants figurativism. There's someone who wants abstract. That's really the genius of it. We have some interesting textile artists that submitted their work. And one in particular I'm super excited about. I mean, we're looking for everything, because when you appeal to 3 million people, there's a lid for every pot, as they say.
Yeah. What do you think fuels those types of trends, where it seems like the tastes of masses of people turn from one thing to another?
Well, I'll tell you that, you know, even though I was trained in art, I never had a real appreciation for street art, because, you know, as a kid and as a young man, you're trained, you don't do that. You don't, you know, spray paint on walls. So in my head, I associate it with something. Yeah, I associate it with like breaking the law or something, right? Mm-hmm. And then I went to, I forget where it was. I think it might have been in the mall. They had a Banksy exhibition. I went to this thing and it just blew my mind. And I think it was in the mall. I can't remember where it was. But anyway, it was such an eye-opening experience. And so for me, that opened my eyes to street art, and abstract art kind of is a cousin of that, right? Obviously, abstract came first, they say. But these two types of art, which again, 10 years ago even, it would have been very difficult to call that mainstream art. These two types of art right now are all the rage. I don't know what fuels those things, but someone like Banksy taking a stand as he has, and, you know, having the art be super relevant to things that are going on in the world right now, poking fun at the traditional art world as he has, that probably has aided it. And, you know, of course, Banksy has counterparts in the abstract world as well. And, you know, interesting kinds of things like Damien Hirst and the strange things he's done to kind of get people to look at art in a different way. I think some of the celebrity does it. I also think that people's right now, I think that people are looking for color and something positive, something to fire them up and make them feel good. You know, we're on the heels, we hope, of this pandemic thing, and we are all trying to figure out our new place in the world. And for some reason, and again, this is just my opinion, so take it for what you will, I think that that popping color and the excitement that you get from that type of artwork, both street art and abstract art, I think that's speaking to people in a new way right now because of what we've all just collectively been through.
Yeah, yeah, good point, absolutely. So once you whittle it down to one final winner, what does that winner receive?
So they'll get 3 months, an exhibition for 3 months in our galleries. We have two galleries in the Forum Shops at Caesars. And so they'll get a 3 month exhibition there. And then we'll offer them a contract for 1, 2, or 3 years. Last year, I think I advertised a 3 year contract, but I changed it because some people that might scare them. And so we thought we'll offer them 1, 2, or 3 years. They can pick what they want and, okay. And we'll do a deal. And then what that means is they'll have representation in our galleries all around the world. And then also in the 100 galleries on cruise ships. And I think a lot of people would be interested to know that, yes, it does mean you'd be represented in the gallery in Soho in New York. For many artists, we're hoping to provide a new way to get into the art scene that would be very difficult to do if you went through sort of the traditional avant-garde art world. You know, there are people who live there their entire lives and never get a single show. We're hoping to fix that. And so this person who manages to win the Made in Vegas competition will also be exhibited in the, well, frankly, the most respected art center and art hub of the entire world in New York City. So we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, that's incredible. So how can listeners get involved in voting for the final three?
So I think the best way is go into our gallery. We have a setup there where you can vote digitally with our iPads in the gallery. And so you're welcome to come on in. If you're not familiar with which pieces are part of the competition, just speak to any member of our team and we would be delighted to direct you to that area. It was unbelievable. So last year we had 600 submissions, but I think we had something like 2,800 votes. People came in from the community. And for us particularly, that was like the peak of the pandemic time for us to get, you know, nearly 3,000 people engaged in this from the Las Vegas community, because that isn't tourists, right? Those are our people. Those are the Las Vegans. So it's it was really exciting. And honestly, I don't know if people from Las Vegas would even know we were there, except that we're saying, come in and take a look and support your local artists and help them find a path to, for most of them, the career they've been dreaming of.
So if you have two galleries at the Forum Shops in Caesar's Palace, which one has the contestants displayed?
So we have a small gallery that's down next to Joe's Stone Crab, and that gallery has a pretty limited space. We actually decided to put a gallery there just so that we could tell people about the enormous gallery we have one floor up. So on the ground level, there's a small gallery, but one floor up, we have a very, very large space, and that's where all of the contestants are being displayed. And you should see the art that they brought in. So I only got to see it digitally, but then I had one of our gallery staff walk around the other day with their phone on, you know, with a live camera. And the art is just unbelievable. I can't wait to see it in person when I'm there in a week or so. And I can't wait for everybody who's listening to come and check it out. There are, by the way, it's not just the competition. There's one of the largest collections of original one-of-a-kind Picasso ceramics that exists in the world is on display in that gallery. There is The Rhinoceros by Albrecht Dürer, one of the most important works of his entire career. Picasso, Dali, Chagall, Moreau, Rembrandt, Erte. So there's all kinds of great things to see there. And a bunch of contemporary artists, Las Vegas own Michael Goddard, Autumn DeForest, and many others are on display there, as well as Kat Tatz and Melanie Stimmel, our folks who we contracted from last year, or at least a couple of them. And so I really invite everybody to come in, check it out. This is not a high pressure sales environment. They'll make you a beverage. You can walk around and enjoy yourself. And I think you're going to love the people that work there. And I think you're going to love the art.
Nice. Okay. So when does the voting take place? What's the window where they can go in there and vote for their favorites?
So let's see. Our closing date for the contest, We had 400 submissions, by the way. I'm now looking at the sheet that she made for me. And okay. By the way, when our marketing team hears that I didn't read this in advance, they'll be delighted. But Heather, honestly, I thought it's better if I just come and talk from the heart. That's what I usually do. So anyway, 400 people submitted before the 24th. And by the way, the voting begins on Monday, August 29th and goes through September 11th. So the 29th to the 11th. And please come into the gallery. We ask one vote per person. And she said four times in this email, and so I have to say it here, Heather, we are open Sunday through Thursday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Friday and Saturday, 10 to 10. And if I didn't say that, Kelsey would have roughed me up. So I just wanted to make sure we let everybody know the hours.
Okay.
Just to make it easy, that mirrors the exact hours of the forum shop. So if you forget, that's an easy thing to look up.
Okay, nice. So parkwestgallery.com if you want to find out more about Park West Gallery, as he mentioned. But if you want to take part in voting for the Made in Vegas Art Competition, it's a great opportunity. So in-person voting is starting on Monday, August 29th, and going through Sunday, September 11th. The Park West Gallery is at the Forum Shops inside Caesar's Palace. And it's open same hours as the Forum Shops, which is Sunday through Thursday from 10 to 9, Friday and Saturday from 10 to 10. And again, only from Monday through to September 11th is your voting window. So go in and help us pick the winner for the new Made in Vegas art competition. I looked at the photos of the artwork and it looks incredible. So I'm actually planning to go down there myself and check it out in person because we've got a lot of talent here in town and it's great.
Unbelievable. I just have to say we've run contests like this in other cities where we have galleries. I've never seen anything like what we got from Vegas. I'd love to have every single one of them come and join our ranks if I could. And maybe over time, that's exactly what we'll do.
Yeah. Yeah, why not, right? Maybe expand it next time. Have instead of just one winner, have multiple winners, and then you can keep growing and growing.
Yeah, believe me, we've been talking about it because it was painful to try to narrow it down. It was awful.
And also, as you mentioned, having it several times a year, that would also allow you to access more of the talent as well.
Yeah. And I think we will do that. And I want to try to figure out how we can do more with the art community in town as well and try to, maybe it's sponsorships or something. We'd like to try to be, again, as I said at the outset, we want to be part of the Las Vegas community as opposed to just being, geared exclusively for the tourists. Obviously, we love our tourists and we're very, we're thrilled and the city needs them and so do we. But we want to do something to make the community better because we're there as well. And so we'll be looking for ways to do that. This is just our first sort of entree.
Yeah, nice. Okay. So parkwestgallery.com, once again, if you want to find out more about the gallery in general. But in-person voting is at the Forum Shops at Caesar's Palace from Monday through to September 11th. And John, I want to thank you so much for letting us know about this gallery. It's pretty new here in town and you're doing some great stuff, getting involved with our talent and helping to promote them and helping them to make their way to Soho. I mean, that's amazing. So thank you so much for your time and for talking with us about this. And I hope the listeners take advantage and go down there and vote. So thank you, John.
Thank you so much for helping us spread the word. And thank you for helping me through the interview. I know I'm not nearly as experienced as you, so I really appreciate it.
No worries.
When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things, even committed some crimes. I'm not a criminal.
Youth Advocate Programs is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration, congregate placement, and neighborhood violence. Learn how at yapinc.org.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Today I'm speaking with Linda Taché, President and CEO of the Collaboration Center Foundation, or CCF. CCF is holding their second annual Night on Blanc fundraising gala in a few weeks. Linda is also the founder of the Grant a Gift Autism Foundation, named after her son Grant, who was diagnosed with autism at age 2.5 and became what she dubbed her chief inspiration officer. After many years, she stepped away and later came on board as president and CEO of CCF. The Collaboration Center Foundation is a disability resource network benefiting individuals and families with autism and other intellectual, developmental, and physical disabilities of all ages. And Grant works there as well. Linda, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, my pleasure, Heather. Thank you for having me here as well.
So take us back to your journey. Why did you decide to step away from the Grant a Gift Autism Foundation?
Well, you know, the Grant a Gift Autism Foundation obviously was inspired by my son, Grant, you know, and really the programs and services grew with him as he was getting older. And we actually had really taken the organization with the supporters that came alongside of us, you know, to this next level when we partnered with the UNLV School of Medicine at the time and created actually the first clinic and the practice plan at that time. So I really, you know, had taken it with this wonderful group of supporters that joined our board and supported the organization. We had taken it as far as we could, you know, as far as I could. And I was like, you know what? I think it's time to explore some other services and, you know, other opportunities and just projects and programs, because I have that entrepreneur spirit. So in 2017, I transitioned out. And the good news is that Grant a Gift is flourishing even more today and serving tons and tons of people. So, you know, that was the first legacy. And then now, as I was consulting, so that's what I ended up doing, is consulting with other organizations, and it freed up my time a little more. But long story short, as I was consulting, this concept of the Collaboration Center came across my path.
Okay. And what was it that attracted you to becoming involved in leading the Collaboration Center Foundation?
Well, that's a great question. You know, over the years, through different, you know, projects, statewide projects I worked on, policy, I really, and even just going through programs, you know, as a parent, I met a lot of families that had children with other types of disabilities, not just autism. You know, they had Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, mental health issues. And really, we had, as parents, we had the same challenges. We had the same, you know, feelings of isolation, of not, you know, finding the right services. We, you know, just a lot of stress financially, emotionally, you know, we had the same challenges. And so I realized that, you know what, we all need to kind of come together to help each other, regardless of the disability. And so what I really attracted me to this was the interdisability or disability inclusiveness, if that makes sense, right?
Yes.
And that really hasn't been happening on a large scale here, because really the organizations of different disabilities are siloed. And so, you know, we thought, how neat would that be to create something from the beginning that was collaborative, right? And secondly, we serve all ages. So we will have a developmental preschool all the way through adult services. And that's another thing that really isn't being done on a large scale. A lot of organizations serve mostly the adult population, or they'll serve really early intervention and start branching out to older services. But we want to be able to do the whole lifespan. So that's, you know, really what attracted me were those two things.
Okay. And what exactly happens at the CCF campus?
Yeah. So basically we have a 5-acre campus. We are in the process. We purchased it during COVID, which is a miracle in and of itself, with some very, very generous angels. We call them donor angels. But not only that, we've had so many other organizations want to partner with us that's really, you know, helped us, you know, a lot. But really what we are becoming with our 5-acre property is a really the largest disability resource network and hub in the state of Nevada. So we want this to be a destination that families can come and really enjoy the grounds, the trees, the grass. And then what we have planned is we plan to have an adaptive preschool, so a developmental preschool. We will have speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and behavior therapy. We will have a neurodevelopmental autism diagnostic clinic. We will also have an art studio, an art therapy studio. The front of the stables are going to be a grab-and-go cafe, so that families can sit there and they can, you know, talk to each other, enjoy some coffee, get a grab-and-go sandwich or salad. And then we're going to have opportunities for some, you know, vocational training and employment training as well. We also are going to have two education-driven classrooms so that if kids are not able to be in a regular school, they can come there and get specialized academic therapy and training. And we'll have some foster care services. We plan to have a health clinic. But the really unique piece is that the horse arena that's currently there, we're going to turn that into an adaptive recreation and event center for all ages. So there will be a sports court, there's going to be pickleball, basketball, a community pool, and then an event area that we envision having these families or young adults coming, you know, once a month and gathering and having a big farm table dinner, doing a dance, mingling. We'll have a family movie area on the outside. We're going to have a wedding venue as well, so people can get weddings. It's crazy. There's so much to say, but all of that is actually really doable on this 5-acre campus. And so we're really, really excited about, you know, how we're going to be able to serve these families holistically and incorporate the mental wellness and health and also the recreation that really is so overlooked because most, you know, clinics don't have that space to address that.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds incredible. And as you were listing through the various services, I was thinking, you're right. There's nowhere that offers all of that in one place.
Absolutely. And I think one of the fun pieces of it, too, is that we have space to do, we're going to build an organic garden so that different schools can come and visit if they don't have a garden. But in addition to that, we're going to have a tortoise habitat. So... because I love turtles. But that, again, there is no place in our state that it is doing anything on that scale. So that's what's really exciting.
Yeah, that's so funny. As you were talking about the garden, I was going to say, just kind of tongue in cheek, you should have some tortoises there. Little did I know.
I beat you to it. Yeah. So yeah. I guess that's it. What do you call it? It's a no-brainer.
Right. How about chickens and goats? Maybe you could add chickens and goats.
Yeah. Well, I think at some point we definitely want to have, definitely I would say chickens. I don't know if we have the space for goats, but definitely, you know, having that, you know, organic, you know, the eggs and, you know, having this, you know, grab and go cafe. We can incorporate that and really make it, you know, how do you say this, healthy, but also educational and life skill, you know, taking care of the animals, you know, it's a life skill. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Where is the campus located?
So the campus is actually in the southwest part of town. We're off of Windmill and Durango, between Durango and Buffalo. And it's actually an old rural residential property that has been there since the early 80s and actually was a horse ranch. However, when we purchased it, that wasn't a direction we were taking with the horses because there's other organizations that are doing that really well. And we knew like the really long wait list. You know, we saw the bones of all the structures on the, you know, the property. So we thought, oh my gosh, how perfect is this to retrofit it, but still keep the structure, the exterior structure still looks like a ranch property, but inside we're going to have all these other things happening. That's going to help eliminate wait lists and, you know, really, again, it really serve our disability community in a fun and great way.
Nice. Okay. So what is the Night en Blanc fundraising gala all about?
Yeah. So this is our second one. And, you know, we thought, you know, how perfect is it to take advantage of this beautiful property that we have? And so last year in September, we started the Night en Blanc and it's a white light gala. So it's actually done at the property under the stars and under thousands of white lights and really neat environment. And we also, instead of, you know, having plated dinners, which that's typical for most galas, we're actually, it's an Epicurean food fair as well. So we have libations, open bar libations. We have different food venues that in the community, that, you know, restaurants that are like, yeah, we want to participate and we want to be a part of this amazing organization and mission. And so it's really neat because people can, it's a food fair type event, but then we transition at the second half, we're going to be transitioning into the arena where there's going to be a regular stage and farm tables, and it's going to be covered, but it's still open aired. So it's really, again, a totally unique experience. And we're honoring some amazing people like Dana Blackhurst and Jan Jones Blackhurst, and then our disability ambassador, which is Michelle Desrochers, who is a celebrity in her own right in the Down syndrome area. And she's just so excited. And it's really nice to be doing this, you know, on her behalf. And it's just going to be amazing. We're going to have a VIP event in the beginning. We're going to have some Cirque acts that are going to be kind of, you know, traveling around and doing some fun stuff. So it's just a really cool ranch chic type of experience. And we do ask that people wear white. So it's white attire, but we ask, we do say you can dress it up with some gold glam, you know, and that's going to be kind of our unique thing every year, is like, what color will it be this year that represents some disability, right? That we're serving. So yeah, it's a great night.
So it's not always white every year?
So yes, it is white. So it's okay. White every year, but we will accent it. We're accenting it with different colors. So whether okay. It's a gold belt or a gold scarf, or, you know, so we want it to be all white, but just some type of accent color if you want to dress it up a little more. But it is white attire for sure.
Which disability does gold represent?
You know what? That's a great question. I didn't come up with the gold color, but okay. I have to. But the thought is that, you know, this year we had the ribbon, the gold ribbon is something kind of unique as what uh-huh. we did last year. But going forward, we will definitely make sure. I know it represents something, but we will figure that out and make sure the night of the event.
Okay, sounds good.
Yes. So yeah, definitely.
Okay. So it's interesting. I mean, okay. So Blanc, obviously being white in French,
yes.
But you have the gala in September, and you know what they always say, but you're not supposed to wear white after Labor Day. So
yes.
You guys are just being rebellious.
Yes, yes, yes. So it's funny. I'm from the West Coast and I never even heard of that rule until my roommate, I went to UNLV for hospitality, when my roommate, who was from Ohio, told me that. I said, really? I've never heard of that. But yes, we are, you know what, you have to be sometimes rebellious to mm-hmm. get things done. And, you know, and it's still warm enough in Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, we are being rebellious in that respect.
So I'm from Toronto. And so okay. Of course, that's where we say it there. But I've been in Vegas for 10 years and my rule is that doesn't exist here because it just doesn't.
It doesn't. I'm from California and it was the same thing. Like I said, I had never heard of that. And I know this is kind of a side note, but I don't know if you've seen that Twizzler commercial where the guy's sitting on the beach and he's wearing white and he's chewing on a Twizzler and he says, "Why can't we wear white after Labor Day?" Who made that rule up, right?
Yeah. Yeah, who?
Who made it up? So, yeah. So, I think we're safe.
Yeah, absolutely. So, what specific programs will the fundraiser support?
So, the fundraiser is actually going to support our case management expansion. So, one of the things that's really unique about us is that we are a collaboration. So, about 80% of the programming that's going to happen on campus is happening through other nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And providers that have their own businesses, but a piece of their business is going to be represented at the Collaboration Center. So how we tie this all together on and off campus is through our Pathways Case Management and Care Coordination Program. So this program is free to any family, anywhere, whether you're in Nevada or not. And they can call and talk to somebody and ask, you know, hey, you know, where, what do I do? Where can I go next? You know, how do I get You know, how do I find a medical provider? How do I know what health insurance they take? So mm-hmm. anything that a family would need to know to really help their child or themselves, right? It can call this case management program. So that's one of the programs that will be supported. In addition to that, we still have to raise money to build out the horse arena and to really make sure that we have that cushion for any overage expenses as we're building the stables out to do all of the things that we had talked about. So that is what this will be, our campus and Pathways program expansion.
Okay. So how can listeners buy tickets if they want to attend?
Sure, absolutely. You can go to our website at collab, that's collablv.org. And we do have an events tab. You can click on that and then just register online. You can do sponsorships, individual tickets, or also buy an ad. So if you can't make it that night, we do ask you to at least purchase an ad. We're expecting about 500 people. Some wow. really amazing key stakeholders in the community will be there, especially who we're honoring. So I would say, you know, it's a very inexpensive way to get your name or your company out there. And then in the meantime, you're supporting a really good cause. So that's how people can register. If you have other questions, you can always email us at events@collablv.org.
Okay. And the event's taking place on Wednesday, September 28th at 6 p.m.?
Correct. Yep. Yeah. At 6 p.m.
Okay. And the website, collablv.org, can listeners also find out more about the Collaboration Center Foundation in general, and maybe even if you have volunteer opportunities available?
Absolutely. Yes. We need volunteers. Thank you for bringing that up, because you can't do something on this scale without help. Right. So we are truly looking for volunteers. And again, yes, they can email us. But also I want to mention that if anyone needs any services, right, mm-hmm. they need to talk to one of our Pathways coordinators, please. There's a tab under programs that you guys can fill out an information sheet, get you know, connected so you can get resources started. The other thing is we are always looking to do tours as well. So, you know, this is such a big thing that we're doing. Sometimes it's hard to explain, mm-hmm. you know, the right way. And so we also you can sign up for a tour, a private tour, and then really, you know, learn more about what we're doing. And then at the same time, how you can get involved on many different levels.
Okay, perfect. So again, it's collablv.org. Collablv.org is the website for the Collaboration Center Foundation. You can find out more about the foundation there. You can buy tickets to the upcoming Night en Blanc event, which is Wednesday, September 28th at 6 p.m. It's going to be at the Las Vegas Ranch campus, which is on Windmill between Durango and Buffalo. You can also email them at events@collablv.org. If you have questions, you can get involved as a sponsor for the fundraiser. You can buy tickets. You can find out more about services. You can find out more about volunteering, helping out, donating, what have you. It's all there. collablv.org. Did I miss anything, Linda?
No, I think we covered everything. And thank you. You know, thank you again for, you know, this is my story and this is my son's story, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it started with Grant a Gift. And again, we're blessed that is thriving right now with everyone that continued the torch. But now we're just building a bigger safety net for the community, you know, to work with everyone. So yeah, thank you for having us here. And we always enjoy sharing everything we're doing. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for your time and letting us know about this great new foundation. I'm sure it's going to resonate with a lot of people. Again, it's incredible what you're doing, that they can't find it anywhere else. So once again, collablv.org to find out more information. Thanks again, Linda.
Thank you, Heather.
To some, a baby's babbling doesn't mean much, but it does. Especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Learn more at autismspeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. The Nevada School of Inquiry, a nonprofit private middle school, is currently enrolling students from grades 6 through 8. This is a micro school that takes a personal approach to learning. Find out more or submit an application at nvsi.school. That's nvsi.school. First Friday Foundation declares that next week's First Friday event is on purpose, celebrating creativity, embracing inclusivity, and igniting critical thinking to make a positive difference in the Las Vegas community. First Friday takes place on Friday, September 2nd from 5 o'clock to 11 o'clock p.m. Find out more information at fffLV.org or on social media at First Friday Las Vegas on Facebook or at First Friday LV on Twitter. Bunnies Matter Rescue is holding their fall festival and rummage sale on Saturday, September 24th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Floyd Lamb Park in the Bunny Building. Find out more about bunny adoptions, the fall festival, or volunteer and donation opportunities at bunniesmatter.org. That's bunniesmatter.org or on Facebook at facebook.com/bunniesmatter. Project 150 is holding their Night in Havana charity fundraiser on Saturday, September 24th at 7 p.m. at the Industrial on Industrial Road. The organization provides free support and services to homeless, displaced, and disadvantaged high school students. Find out more or get your tickets at project150.org. That's project150.org. The Nevada chapter of the National Hemophilia Foundation, or NHF, is holding their Unite for Bleeding Disorders walk for the first time since 2019 on Saturday, October 8th at 9:30 a.m. at Floyd Lamb Park. If you personally donate $25 or more, you'll receive a special Unite for Bleeding Disorders t-shirt and walk bag. Find out the details, register, or begin fundraising at hfnv.org. That's hfnv.org. Junior Achievement of Southern Nevada is holding their J.A. Booathon Bowling Fundraiser on Saturday, October 15th and Sunday, October 16th at 8:30 a.m. at the Santa Fe Bowling Center. Get all the details at jasnv.org. That's jasnv.org. Black Pearl Promotions is holding a Bring Back the 70s Disco fundraising event to support Domestic Violence Awareness Month and Breast Cancer Awareness Month on Friday, October 28th from 8 p.m. till midnight at Starbase LV on West Diablo Drive near Allegiant Stadium. Get all the details and buy your tickets at blackpearlpromotions.com. That's blackpearlpromotions.com. The 26th Annual Boulder City Lions Club Charity Golf Tournament is happening on Saturday, November 12th at 8 a.m. at Boulder City Municipal Golf Course. You can sign up now through October 1st by sending a message through social media at facebook.com/Boulder City Lions Club.